I have napped almost every day this week. And that's either really, really a good thing or a terrible thing, and I'm not sure which.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, episode 405. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by laggy Seth Miller. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. You're not that bad right now, so we'll take it while we can. So hotel Wi-Fi is hit or miss, right?
It's, yeah. I try not to complain about this sort of thing, but, you know, free Wi-Fi that's under 1 megabit with the email as soon as you log in reminding you that you can upgrade to the £5 version to get, you know, 8x bandwidth. Let's just say that of the three nights I'm here, I imagine they're going to get the £5 from me at least once. But all things considered, this is still the only hotel I could find in London for, not the only, but the only vaguely reasonable hotel I could find in London for under like £200.
Where are you staying?
I'm staying at the Premier Inn at Victoria Station.
Oh, okay. So you're close to a train station, which is nice.
Right by a train station, so good access to the transit there. The Victoria line is, surprisingly, right at the Victoria Station. If I was flying out of Gatwick, it would even be even better because that's where the Gatwick Express runs from. I'm flying out of Heathrow on Wednesday, so that adds a little extra connection there. But
yeah.
Is it worth going out of my way to take the Elizabeth line?
I mean, it'd be nice to see it.
Right? That's I keep coming back to it. Like, my flight's at 9:40 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll talk about why that's the wrong time a little later in the show. But my flight's at 9:40 in the morning. I figure I got to get there around 8, and it's like, it's Heathrow, so it's an hour-ish, no matter what. And if I don't want to take Heathrow Express because I find that obnoxious and expensive. So, like, do I really want to leave at 6:30?
But is it that much out of the way?
It's like an extra 20 or 30 mm-hmm. minutes, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. That's tough.
But I mean, it's also a travel day, and I don't really sleep well. So there's a decent chance I'll be up, anyways.
Yeah. I mean, if you're up, I would do it. I'd do the Elizabeth line. If you're not, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I might just go and, like, track it down and ride a couple stops just for grins because I've got nothing to do for a couple days anyway.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good plan.
So, anyway.
WestJet.
Speaking of good plans, or are they?
Are they? Yeah, WestJet consolidating all their 787s to Calgary.
Yeah. So, you know, that whole, like, we're going to fly international, we got long-haul planes, it's going to be great. We'll run them from Toronto as well and compete with Air Canada and Transat and some of the other transatlantic folks. Yeah, not going so well.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit surprising. I think the real issue there is not that it's a surprise so much as just the yields weren't there.
Yeah.
This is one of those things, like, so sort of a long time coming. They mentioned a couple months ago now that they weren't going to take any more 787s. They had maybe a couple planned, but they were going to sort of pause those deliveries.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to assume at this point, because of Boeing's troubles, any airline that wants to get out of sort of any Boeing plane these days doesn't have much trouble with that.
Yeah.
Because everything's at least a year late, which is usually the cutoff for those contracts. But so the opportunity to get out of those planes seems reasonable. And then beyond that, like, right, we talked, I think, last week about the MAX 10 order and trying to sort of shift gears in terms of how WestJet wants to grow. It's sort of a little disappointing in some ways because, like, right, a few years ago when the whole long haul thing started, they made a big deal out of connecting Calgary onward to the world, and it was going to be they were going to make a connecting hub, right? Like, yeah, it was always going to be at Calgary, so that makes some sense, but it was going to be Calgary onward, and especially we're talking about Asia. Things change, I get it. Instead, now they have a new co-share with Korea out of Vancouver, I think, at Toronto, so there's one of your Asia markets that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
But, and China's still closed or mostly closed. And who knows if, I mean, I guess they could try Tokyo, but like they shifted everything. And so I guess it's hard for me to think that, like, you know, when they were going to fly from the west, you know, west going west, mm-hmm. there were some efficiencies of the schedule and the routes, right? It's like Finnair made a compelling argument for flying via Asia. Or flying to Asia via Helsinki because it was a short, better connection. I think this was going to be sort of the same thing going westbound from North America. And instead, they tried to compete to Europe where there was a massive amount of competition and the routes weren't as good and efficient. Yeah. So, like, cool if they got some London slots, but... And?
Well, and they run some strange ones anyway, too. Like, they run, like, is it Halifax to Dublin? Like, they run some strange stuff. Not strange, but the competing stuff with Air Canada out of the further east.
Yeah, so actually, one of our good friends, formerly of Continental Fame, was talking to her recently, and she's flying back, I think, London to Halifax. She lives in Nova Scotia. She's flying London to Halifax on WestJet because, like, they offer it as easy.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's London. So there's some, and that's, like, but it's a daytime, well, westbound is always daytime, I guess, but daytime 737 MAX for them.
So they're not moving. They're not moving those planes around. I mean, I guess they're making some money somewhere in this market. But it's
and that is, you're right though. That is one that competes with Air Canada still. I get screwed on it every time I try to fly it because their connection's in and out of Boston are timed wrong. It's like a 23-hour connection every time, and I won't do that.
Yeah, it makes some sense to kind of pull back, but I don't think they're going to be able to compete to Europe out of Calgary like they could have out of Toronto. I don't think there's enough. Like, they try to sell those tickets to me, right? Like, Portland to Calgary to Europe. And it's not compelling because it's a 2.5-hour flight on a Q400 to get to Calgary and then a mediocre connection. I don't know. I mean, maybe if they flew to more markets in Europe, I would be competing.
Yeah, and unfortunately for you, I mean, 2.5 hours on a Q400 is usually, unless you're an otter, probably a bad choice for life just in general.
Yep.
But beyond that, I would say, you know, like, that's a bad, it's not a great, Calgary's not a great connection. It's a vaguely okay, like, route connection point for you, but obviously if the flights don't work and the times don't work, it's not good. Going to the transatlantic, it's not a good connection point for you, transpacific, right? Like,
Phoenix going backwards
is what they want, or Florida or some of those, and those aren't necessarily all routes that they even, or even LA sort of works, but those aren't necessarily routes that they run from the Florida stuff. I don't think they run as much from Calgary, so.
Yep.
It's hard to pull that together, but I don't know. I think for me, the biggest disappointment really is that, like, they didn't go all in on Asia like they said they were going to. I think, I mean, who the hell knows what the market was actually doing at that time? It's been a couple of years now, and COVID got in the way, but I feel like they sort of probably had a better chance there, and obviously they thought otherwise, and since they have the data, I should probably listen to them a little bit, but
yeah.
I'm not good at that.
Let's talk about some MAX issues. So there's pilots are kind of speaking up about the certification problems with the MAX. Tell me about this.
So, right, last week we talked about it a little bit, about how there's going to be, how the letter came from the FAA basically telling Boeing, hey, you remember how you guys thought you had all this work, all the paperwork done, and you were making great progress? Yeah, not so much. Mm. Basically confirming that there's zero chance that the MAX 7 gets certified this year, and the MAX 10 is going to happen after that. So, MAX 10 we've been pretty sure wasn't going to happen this year. It all comes down to they need a congressional extension on our approval from Congress to extend their deadline. Mm. And we talked about it a little bit last week as well, that at least someone's got a bill started, an amendment started on a bill that should give them what they're looking for. So they'll probably get it, is my, you know, nuanced analysis of that. I think they'll get it, whether they should or not, notwithstanding. The question, though, or the weird conflict comes up where American Airlines Pilot Union has come out and said, we don't think that Congress should approve this extension. They had long enough. We want the flight deck to be as safe as possible. And that's, you know, right? And I think Gary Leff put out a headline in his typical way of Boeing appealing to make planes less safe or something like that, right? Like, there's a safety argument to be made here. So that came out. And then a day later, the Southwest Pilots Union came out with a statement saying, no, we think it's safer if all the MAX fleet have the same flight deck. We don't want this extra alerting and some of these other changes that are going to be, would be required by the law, because we actually think the switching back and forth between the different configurations would be confusing for our pilots, and they might, you know, in an emergency situation, basically run the wrong checklist in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm summarizing and paraphrasing there, but that's the gist of it. And so, right, there's this sort of debate back and forth of what is safe or what is safest, right? Is it arguably slightly less information but consistent, or is it the more information and the better alerting stuff. But you might have to remember which plane you're flying on a day-to-day or flight-to-flight basis. Southwest's argument is basically our pilots fly lots of short hops and could switch between types regularly, like, you know, could switch from a MAX 7 to a MAX 8 and back on alternating flights over the course of a day. We think that that would be, or even, you know, day after day, be less safe. American's counterpoint is the 757 and 767 have a common type rating, and people switch between them all the time, even though there are some differences between them. So what's the big deal? I don't know which of those is right. I certainly can see both points, but I think at the end of the day, because of the potential impact for jobs and things like that, Boeing gets their extension.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
I just love that the two unions have differing opinions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's interesting because they, like you said, they fly kind of different styles, right? Like AA's flying a hub style, and Southwest is not. So, yeah, to a point, you know what I mean? So.
Southwest has hubs. They don't call them that, but Southwest has hubs.
Yes.
They also have a lot of docks. They have a lot of random point-to-point stuff, but they sort of have hubs.
Yeah. Tell me about this FAA ruling on crew rest.
Sorry, I'm eating dessert here, too.
Not allowed while you're in Europe. No dessert.
No, dude. I went to the M&S, which is one of the little grocery stores,
mm-hmm.
and got cocoa dusted liquid salted caramels, like chocolate bonbons with salted caramel inside, dusted with cocoa. They're delicious. I'm going to put the lid on that. Okay, so the FAA flight attendant rule. For a long time, pilots have had 10 hours between flights mandated by the FAA, including 8 hours guaranteed in a hotel room.
Yep.
Flight attendants for 4 years have been supposed to get that as well, based on a ruling, but have basically the FAA stalled it for 4 years. And now suddenly it was like, nope, we're going to do it. So the real issue, right, question is, does it matter at this point? And it seems like most of the U.S. carriers already were there in terms of, you know, with the exception of Delta, I think all the majors are unionized and have that in their contract. So it's not a huge shift. And even Delta was doing similar and whatever. So, right, I don't think it's a huge shift, but someone raised the issue of, because it's now codified, it's no longer something that the flight attendants could choose to waive if things go sideways. Whereas when it was a contract, you know, consideration, they could always waive it and, you know, either be compensated or, you know, be nice people or whatever it is. So
yeah.
There is some, I don't want to say potential there that you end up in a situation where flight attendants are like, nope, we actually can't, you know, fly yet tomorrow morning or whatever it is. So there's also, I think the 10 hour is one part of it, and the 8 hour behind the door is a separate bit. And so that, I think the 10 hour or the 8 hour behind the door, not all of them necessarily had. So I still think it's good for flight attendants. It's probably good for safety.
Yeah.
Not probably. It should be good. It is good for safety. If it means a couple extra flights every now and then, have a delay starting out the morning because something got in late last night, always, anything's possible, but probably a good plan.
We're going to make this a little shorter show, so we only got a couple more topics before we get to the bonus stuff, but let's talk about air tags, Lufthansa. Don't laugh too hard.
I might snarf my red wine. I already spilled something on my shirt at dinner, so I don't want to do that. Apparently, Lufthansa's out there telling people that they can't put air tags in their bags.
Oh, really?
And it was sort of, they're like basically saying they have batteries in them, so they're hazardous goods. Right, that's a terrible interpretation of the rule about hazardous goods. And putting that aside, someone shared it with me the other day that, like, someone got a quote from basically from Lufthansa saying, like, citing chapter and verse of this hazardous materials rule. It was like, is this real? And my response was, no, but that means that doesn't mean they won't do it anyways. Right. And so it seems like there's actually a lot of confusion within the company, even. It was Ethan Clapper from Points Guy reached out to this all blew up last Friday. Someone wrote the story basically saying, like, this is what Lufthansa says, they're going to stop letting people put air tags in their bag. Now, keep in mind, there's no way they could tell.
Yeah.
Let's start with, this is unenforceable. and go from there. But then beyond that, I mean, I guess they could like walk by with an iPhone, and if they detect this, like they see an iTag, you even see someone else's tag. Like,
I don't think so. I think you'd have to wait. Yeah, you'd have to like wait until it chimed or whatever.
Yeah,
so away from the owner.
Unenforceable. Fine. On top of all of that, like, it's actually not against the rules or the hazard rules. So, but anyway, Ethan like reached out to their court palm and was like, "Hey, is this for real?" And they're like, "No, we're not changing anything." But at the same time, like, they're responding to people on Twitter saying, "No, these aren't allowed." So, yeah,
Twitter folks have gone rogue.
Well, this is what happens when you don't do a good job managing your internal communications and policies.
Yes. So I mean, could it be that they don't? Or maybe they just—it's like a lack of understanding of the air tags. I mean, that definitely could be it, right? Where they are like, "Oh, it has a battery, so it's clearly not allowed."
And it's a transmitting device, except it's a passive Bluetooth. So, like, you know, cool.
Yeah.
And those same Bluetooth things are like in the cabin in the same way. So, like, I'm sure there's some confusion and misunderstanding here. That it's made it this far in terms of like the public facing communications team having mixed messages is terribly unfortunate. It should never come to that.
Yeah. I don't, it seems wild to me that this would come. I mean,
also, like, again, why did this even become an issue? Like, who was like reading some random IATA or ICAO documentation? Like, when it was like, "Oh gosh, we got to take up like
no air tags,
no air tags, we got to take a stance on this."
You mean people are tracking how lost their bags are?
Right, there's also that angle of it, which is like, "Hey, Lufthansa, if you didn't lose everybody's bag," like, and this summer was bad for everybody in Europe, but you know, Lufthansa doesn't have the best track record this year either. So
yeah. Winter is coming. I like how you titled this one. So Norse and Flyer, which Flyer is the other Icelandic carrier, right?
No, that's Play is the Icelandic one. Flyer is another Norwegian startup.
Oh, that's so bad.
You know, this one is IATA code is OG, right?
Really?
Yeah, don't hit the flare.
I like that. I wonder if they did that on purpose.
Oh yeah, there's no way that's an accident.
That's kind of awesome.
It's ironic in that they're not the original, but whatever.
So Flyer is another carrier in Norway, and they are having some cuts as well.
Yeah,
it's like Norse,
just like Norse. I think we talked a little bit about Norse.
We did
last week. Last year,
losing your mind.
But so now Flyer, whatever, is on this as well. And I've been looking for some flights into next year, this week, and this, like, planes are still pretty full. I get the feeling that, you know, fares are still pretty high for this winter. And maybe capacity is down from over the summer, and I get all of that. But, like, and also, like, for Norse, like, why did they think Berlin was a good idea? Why did they think the longer flights to Los Angeles were a good idea? I get some of those challenges in their operations.
Yeah.
But also, like, is there a separate set of challenges around, you're a new airline, you didn't really establish yourself well enough and reliably enough during the peak summer season, so people are going to come looking for you. And as, you know, winter sets in, there's actually not quite as much demand as, or right? Is it just that people don't know about you and aren't looking for you? Or is there really a shrinkage of demand back down to a level that can sort of only support the well-established players?
Mm.
And I can't tell what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard some people talking about how, you know, business demand is back and to 80% of what it was before COVID. Anecdotally, not for me, and I traveled more than most people. So I don't know that I see that. And I do hear people talking about, well, you know, flights look expensive, I'm not going to take that trip. You know, I've heard friends say that like during the winter. So maybe it's a bit of both. Maybe it's, I mean, did they even fly the LA Berlin flight?
I think so.
Cause if they didn't,
you think that when they didn't even launch?
Yeah. I'm thinking like, if you didn't even launch it, like, how would you even sustain that during the winter if you didn't have it during the summer?
Well, right. And that's the thing. It's like, it sucks that they got started a little later than they meant to. Mm-hmm. But I certainly, or even if they only ran it for like the last month of the summer season, right? Like, it certainly makes sense to me not to try to launch very marginal rounds. Someone noted that, like, Los Angeles is a warm seasonal destination, so shouldn't that do as well as Fort Lauderdale?
Which I think I brought that up last week.
Yeah,
last week, right? It's a different target market, and I get that. It's also a much longer flight.
Yeah.
Not quite longer enough to ruin your aircraft utilization, but it's close.
And, I mean, I get some of that. I think with Flyer, though, what are they doing? Because they're not, they don't have...
They're short-haul stuff.
Yeah, they're
short-haul stuff, or, you know, within Europe. What are they doing? Flying less. They're sort of collapsing back down to more domestic operations and less of the holiday beach traffic.
Hmm. Yeah.
So,
I mean, I was reading some of the European finance stuff, just like economic stuff, and yeah. it is taking probably a bigger beating than the United States. I will say
definitely.
That.
Definitely.
I mean, it to the point where it's a little worrisome, just from a finance perspective, how the EU is going to handle the winter itself. So, I mean, I get some of it. Maybe this is just preemptive. Like, they're just like, hey, we don't want to take a risk.
Yeah. I just keep wondering, like, did they have... And in reality, it's like the risk rate is you have to fly these half-empty planes. Otherwise, you owe people EU261 comp or something like that. And they clearly know what their break-even load factor is. And if they see it's not going to happen,
yeah.
I guess that makes some sense. It's unfortunate in many ways, but I think I do think you're right. Especially within Europe, it's a bigger commentary on the weakness over here. And I mean,
yeah,
I've seen some just currency-wise. I've had a good trip, but you can see some of that weakness start to show, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, it's for Europeans, right? It used to mean that they had a strong currency for shopping and vacationing in the United States. And that's not the case right now, right? It's weak, maybe break even, but weak.
Yeah.
So, I think that's the show. We're just going to keep it short this week. You know, you're traveling. I'm tired. And we're going to talk about some bonus stuff. Like Eurostar being a literal pain in the ass. The reason you're leaving on a earlier flight, later flight?
Earlier.
Earlier flight on Wednesday. We'll talk about that too. And some NFT stuff, because why not? So if you're a Patreon subscriber.
My blood pressure really needs that.
Right before you go to bed, right?
On the list. It's my fault, but my blood pressure really doesn't need that.
But if you're a Patreon subscriber, stick around for those topics. And we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels. Bye-bye.
Take care.